The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.
I'm Emmett Kennedy as we look ahead to Gold Cup Day in the company of Racing Post NAPS champion 2020, Rory De Largy, who is continuing to slay it, and we're straight in with the Norfolk Stakes. So fast five, and once again, we've got Wesley Ward represented, on this occasion heavily represented, too. Nakatomi, who Peter Fornatale in the previous podcast was very keen on. The betting is headed currently by Johnny Velasquez on Lucci, and Katamasso for Aidan O'Brien, who comes here as the Acropolis has already won the Coventry. We think. Rory, what is your thoughts on the Group 2 Norfolk Stakes over the Flying Five?
My initial thoughts on this is, what's the ground going to be?
Now, that's a very, very good question.
Yeah.
So how has the forecast changed? So we recorded on Sunday night. The forecast for Tuesday and Wednesday is for good, possibly good to firm ground. We know they're going to water, but there's a change in the air. So what is the status of the ground that you think by the time we come to Gold Cup Day?
The weather forecast I saw this morning suggested quite a lot of rain on Thursday morning.
Uh-oh.
Now, I just looked at that again, and it now suggests a hell of a lot of rain for Friday afternoon. So that potentially changes things.
Yeah.
There is there's a suggestion of showers from Wednesday night, but you know, the question is when, if that rain is going to materialize and when it's going to materialize, and that has changed. That's changed markedly in the last couple of hours, because as I said, I looked at that. Well, I looked at that when we spoke yesterday, and the forecast was for over an inch of rain on Thursday morning before racing. But as I look at the same site, I've got more rain, but not for a full day, and slightly more than that after it was originally predicted for, which could change things markedly, mainly because I really fancy two soft ground horses on Thursday.
Well, we still want to hear about them, but it's another example of taking a long-range forecast with the just a little bit of degree of trepidation. Like, they were completely wrong for Epsom. The going that they forecast for Epsom was totally wrong. And the fact that it's changed dramatically so quickly today tells you pretty much all that you need to know. But let's go. Let's assume that the going is good for Gold Cup Day. And with that in mind, who do you like in the Norfolk?
The Norfolk doesn't look a particularly strong race from the point of view of the home challenge. Lots of interesting horses in here, but most of them have other entries at the meeting. Some of them already declared. So the likes of Ebro River, who's dropped up here, is already declared for the Coventry. Tipperary Sunset, I think, is in the Windsor Castle, etc., etc. Nymphadora, she's in the Queen Mary, and it's not that easy getting a handle on it. Although there are horses in here who've only got the one possibility. Who are potentially overpriced because the firms have got a number of horses in the market who won't be running, and they may have missed the trick with that. So there might be a few in there who are overpriced. Like, he was a winner on debut for Brian Smart. He's only got, as far as I'm aware, the one entry. He's jocked up here. He's quite interesting. I think he's 14, 16 to 1. Interesting at that. Because
Project Dante with Grimley on board.
Yeah, so he's quite interesting. But if the going isn't soft, I'd be pretty keen on the chance of the Katamasso.
Excellent. And a sea of blue and odds checker.
Yeah, when he was a winner on debut at Dundalk. So there's obviously, you know, question mark about him on the turf. But I think, you know, when the horses are ready to run, and when he did run, he ran in April, when there wouldn't have been that many opportunities to run on turf. And if you were running on turf at that stage, it would have been pretty testing turf as a rule. So he was impressive in winning by 3.5 lengths from Silver Surfer. I'd imagine he wore a tongue tie there. He'd probably wear one here, but obviously they don't have decks yet, which complicates that from our point of view. He's not really bred to handle much softer grind, but if the rain misses it, he'd obviously be very interesting. You've obviously got the Wes Ward angle through most of the juvenile races. Lucci put in his favourite, Nakatomi a couple of points bigger than that. I thought Lucci didn't look. It's very hard getting a handle from this side of the pond on how good the Ward horses are. They always look good when they win by a wide margin on their US debuts, or for those of them who just needed a spin on their second starts. But it's not always easy to see how that will slot in here. In terms of what he achieved, Lucci wasn't as impressive as one or two of West Ward's runners this week. And he seems a short price. John Velasquez on board. There's very little between them in terms of form. And you would argue that Nakatomi is the more interesting of the pair. He's had plenty of time between that debut, which came back in the middle of April at Keeneland, when he won by 2.25 lengths from Happy Soul. Again, that's not easy form to work out. But typical Wes Ward, blinkered for debut, won that pretty impressively. I think the most important thing with him is that he's had those 9 weeks to progress since. Was he gelded before debut, or has he been gelded since?
He ran on debut as a full Happy Horse. He will run at Royal Ascot as a gelded horse.
Yeah, that's not a massive concern. But to be honest, gelding these reasonably early tends to help them grow. And to be honest, I think we're probably pretty slow by gelding horses here. You know, knowing that such a small percentage of them will go on to be commercial sires, if you've got a sprinting two-year-old, it's probably beneficial to geld them fairly early. So he's interesting, but again, it's not easy to work out the form. So I end up coming down on Caramosto, but obviously you'd have heard Pete Fornatal talk about the Ward runners, and he'll know an awful lot more than me. So if he's super sweet on Nakatomi, then don't be ignoring his wise words.
Wise words indeed. And we have a huge American audience, and thank you very much to everybody for tuning in. And I have absolutely no doubt that is all based on Peter Fornatal and Naomi Tucker's fantastic work, and Peter will be here for a review. His talk about Nakatomi is more about the price than anything else, and he, like you, is not concerned about the gelding operation in the slightest. But very interesting that you're interested in Caramosto, and who represents the stallion who won this race back in 2013 for the aforementioned Wesley Ward and Nakatomi. The Hampton Court, now this is a bit of a mess, because as you were saying with the weather forecasts, like AccuWeather are saying there's a yellow warning for thunderstorms and 3.6 millimeters of rain, which wouldn't affect the ground, from Wednesday 6 p.m. to Friday 6 a.m. But earlier on today, you were reading a reliable website that gave a completely different indication, and they've now changed that to, oh no, it's going to be fine. So it's a bit of a mess. So if you could sum it up in 1 minute for us. We've got the horse who was withdrawn from the Derby. Presumably, this would be an easier race. But I remember when you talked about the Derby on the Final Furlong podcast, you mentioned him and said a little bit concerned about the fact that they took him out at the 11th hour.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that that he wants really fast ground. And if there's no rain, then Mohafeth would look like a really solid bet on this. Or, you know, look to have a very strong chance based on his really easy win in the Newmarket Stakes. On the other hand, if we had heavy rain in the morning before the race, I think he would be a non-runner. And that changes the race. If you think he's coming out of the race, then there's value to be had backing one or two against him. Moving Time is the horse that I like. He doesn't need soft ground. He's only won a maiden, but I think he's improving rapidly. The horse he beat in his maiden won by 6 lengths himself next time out. I like him. If you do think it's going to be very soft, there are one or two others with soft ground form at bigger prices that I wouldn't put you off. But given that the chances of that massive downpour now seem considerably less likely, I'm not inclined to play the soft ground angle in the race. And if Mahathath was in, I'd have a fairly neutral view of that.
Okay. I would be in agreement with you. I think it's a mess of a race. The Ribblesdale, on the other hand, though, when we talk about the fillies, is a much clearer picture, particularly when you've got Noon Star in as favourite. A lot was expected of this filly heading into the Oaks trial at York for the Sir Michael Stout team. She ended up missing the Oaks, comes here instead. James Doyle is on board. Eshada, two runs, two wins for Roger Varian and Jim Crowley, who's your second favourite at fours. And then Dubai Fountain, who got destroyed by Snowfall from Mark Johnston and William Buick. A 13-day turnaround for her. Frankie Dettori is back with John and Teddy Gosden in the Nielsen colours, which of course he'll be sporting in the Gold Cup, which we'll talk about in a few minutes' time. Is this race a clearer picture to you? Are you a little bit more confident?
It's a little clearer. Noonstar shouldn't be affected by the absence of rain or the presence of rain. She's won on soft ground in Nottingham, and it's been good when she won her novice at Wetherby, in which she beat the Lingfield Oaks trial winner back into fourth. So that does look like good form. And obviously her second in the Musidor has been well priced by the winner bolting up in the Oaks. And so she's pretty obvious on that basis. She did have a setback, though, which saw her miss the Oaks. They didn't just decide to go here instead. So that's worth bearing in mind. I would have been inclined at the prices to give Dubai Fountain another chance. She just ran too bad to be true at Epsom. And obviously the filly that she beat at Chester also ran badly there. And I think most people are taking the view that, the Chester form must be no good. There's no way the way she ran at Chester and the way Zayada ran are in any way connected with how they ran at Epsom. So I'm inclined to write them off completely. For whatever reason, she just didn't give her running there. She's got very solid form. Her fourth in the Fillies Mile last year is rock solid. We know she stays. She stays at the 11.5 furlongs at Chester. And she's quite a big price, 8-1. Again, the worry with her is she does want soft ground. She maybe doesn't want it hop deep, but her very best efforts have come with digging the ground. That said, you know, she was second in the May Hill at Doncaster last year and did the firm. So she's not going to be a non-runner if the ground turns, if the ground stays quick. But it just hampers her chances slightly. But I think even at 8-1, I think she's in each way better than the race. Because she's, as I said, I've seen plenty of fillies bob out completely in the Oaks and bounce back, including, you know, several winners of this race have come here having not covered themselves in glory at Epsom. And it doesn't bother me enormously. I don't think she's the likeliest winner of the race. But I think if you're getting 8-1 about her, she certainly makes more appeal to me than Eshada. You know, Eshada beat Gloria Monday last time out. Both of them are engaged here. That doesn't look particularly strong form to me. It was a modestly run listed race, and I don't believe for a second it's especially strong form. In fairness, the two fillies who filled the places there are lightly raced improving sorts. From yards who you know how to get them ready for Ascot. So I'd respect them on that basis, but it's difficult to know how good the form is. The three who've run since have run okay without setting the world alight. Sea Empress was favourite for that and was only sixth. She won next time out, but she didn't show form that was up to pattern standard. She won narrowly enough in a novice race at Chelmsford when she was long odds on. So I'm not sure that anything's done enough for that form to suggest that Eshada and Gloria Monday should be single figure prices here.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, personally, I think the favourite's going to take a lot of beating, Noonstar, as long as she's okay. And James Savage can tell us more. He's on the day 5 preview, but he will go back. The day 5 preview will be out before the first race. So he'll give us the talking points about the Sir Michael Stout yard. I just wondered from the perspective of a place bet on Tote with the Whirlpool and the 10% bonus with Tote Plus, as long as you're betting with tote.co.uk, tote.ie, the official Tote app, if Nicest is way too big a price at 66s. And then I realized, oh, she's not 66s anymore. She's down to 33s with most firms, but you can get 50s. Two respectable ones. but she's closing. I just wonder if she's a horse who's capable of running a much, much bigger race, because I know that Danica thinks an awful lot of her. So Nicest would be on my radar as an each way bet, but I would favor Noonstar and probably play some form of an exacta. To the Gold Cup feature race. Feature race of the week back in the day, Rory. And Stradivarius.
It remains the feature race of the week.
Yes.
Whether you like it or not.
Of course it does. Of course it does. And look, in this instance, may very well be so, because Stradivarius bids to join Yates as a 4-time winner of this race, which would make him a 5-time winner at Royal Ascot overall, because of course he took the Queen's Vase as well. So this is fascinating. Well done to Connections for keeping him in training. But we learned last year how difficult it can be to keep older horses in training, and we'll see how this plays out. He's come out and had a prep run, which was at Ascot, and he was very impressive that day, beating Ocean Wind, and he is an odds-on favorite. 10 to 11 is about the best you're going to do. Subjectivist, 11 to 2. Trushan, he would benefit from rain if it comes. Eights. Spanish Mission, 10s. Santiago, 12s. Tiger Moth is still, he's not running, and Aidan O'Brien has told us on this show he has no intention of running him over 2 miles again. Stop pricing him up for races.
Stop leaving him in races.
Yeah. Stop pricing him up for races that A, he's not entered in, and B, that is not a trip that they plan to run him over. They think he's a 10, 12 furlong horse. Serpentine supplemented, the Derby winner. And I think Rory would know this better than me, but I think it's 40 years since a Derby winner has come out and won the Gold Cup. But we'll see. As Serpentine is supplemented for the lads, and Aaron Naveen has taken a wild drift in the market, way out to 40s after disappointing last time out. So is this a case of Stradivarius is going to be himself blowing kisses to the crowd while Frankie downs a bottle of Moet with the 12,000 people who are there, and just has a good old time for himself? Or is he vulnerable? Is he a vulnerable favorite, in which case we should be taking him on? What's your take on the Gold Cup?
Again, the weather is crucial here. We know he can win a soft crowd. He did last year. Although, you know, again, there were plenty of horses with fast crowd form winning at Ascot last year, despite the rain that fell on the eve of the meeting. And he was well beaten at Ascot later in the season, behind Trushan. I think Trushan on softish ground is a better horse than Stradivarius, which is a very bold call. I'm suggesting he's better in the grand scheme of thing over the years, because Stradivarius has proved himself for great. But Trushan is one of those rare horses who I think can set a relentless gallop at the Gold Cup trip and keep it up. And Stradivarius hasn't really met a horse quite like that before, unless it's been a slow poke like DXB. And I'd be very, very, very keen on Trushan here.
Yes.
With any ease on the ground.
If it's,
but, you know, good to firm ground becomes a sticking point.
Yeah.
He doesn't need the mud.
He'd get away with good.
He was very impressive in the mud at Ascot in October. But however you watch that race, you know, he was enormously impressive, and the form is rock solid. You can make excuses, obviously, for Stradivarius' end of a long season. He was very disappointing, but I think the performance put up by Trushan was better than anything Stradivarius did last season. Now the question is, if they met in the Gold Cup on different ground, whether you would get the same kind of result. But I thought that was a proper Group One performance from Trushan. I thought he ran really well on his return. Bear in mind, he was giving weight away over a trip short of his best, and with nothing to really pull him through the race either. I thought he also shaped like the, I thought he shaped like the best horse in the day. He just gives Trushan something to shoot at. But that was a good performance. He's going to come forward for it. He's perfectly happy on good ground. But obviously, if it was very fast, that does suit Stradivarius. But Stradivarius has won all his races by utilizing a turn of foot. He settles so well that he stays pretty much any trip. and then he can show that turn of foot against horses who are not as quick as him. He's fully effective at a mile and a half. He just ends up meeting better horses at a mile and a half. And obviously, if this turns into the kind of race where, you know, they go along at three-quarter pace for 2 miles, then it's really playing into the hands of the three-time winner again. But I think the Trusham will look to set a strongish pace. You know, I think he will look for the pace to be even to start with, and then really look to crank it up, because he is an out-and-out galloper, and that's the way he will win his races. So he doesn't want to be setting this up for Stradivarius. He wants to be stretching Stradivarius from the home turn or from before the home turn. And I think that's what connections are geared up for. And if there was the ease in the ground, I'd be very confident about him. I think he's a crazy price at 8-1, unless you thought the ground was going to be good to far.
I'm with you. And I'm very, very intrigued to see how this is going to play out. The ground is a slight concern for me, but it's only a slight concern. And I'm almost of the mindset to put him in the 10 to follow mini game and just leave out Stradivarius, because Stradivarius is, you could say he's so obvious that you kind of have to put him in. But if Trusham wins and Stradivarius gets beaten, game on. We've seen odds on shots getting beaten in this race in the past. Order of St. George was a damn good horse who got beaten in this race twice at a short price. Fame and Glory came back to defend his crown. I think he was long odds on that year and he got beaten. And it's just difficult to keep coming back as a full horse at the age of 7 and get him to go.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a time when you know, either wear and tear or enthusiasm begin to wear a little bit.
Yeah. It's the story of the week if he wins. It'll be incredible if he does it. I'll be one of the first to cheer him on, because to win 5 consecutive years at Royal Ascot is bonkers, and to win 4 Gold Cups is just insane. You know, that's why Yates is so special. But that being said, I think Trusham was really, really good, and he was beaten by an ill-fated, very talented horse in Anthony Van Dyck at Paris Longchamp. He was pretty well held in the arc. He was awful at Ascot. He's come back with a win, but it wasn't necessarily a deep enough race. So I'm with you. I'm with you on Trusham, and I don't have much of an interest on anything else. If you want to play the Toad Centre Follow mini game, deadline is Tuesday, 12 p.m. Entry is €5.50 per stable in Ireland, or £5, which is actually quite fair considering the current currency conversion. So fair play, Toad. And 100% of the pool goes all into the prizes. So 100% of what goes in, Toad don't take anything out. And it costs a lot of money to set up the logistics and to run this game, but they put everything right back in for you. There is also a free-to-play option where the prizes include, and please God, we'll be able to do this, 2022 Ascot annual membership covering all of Ascot, excluding the Royal Meeting. Second, hospitality for 2 on Victoria Cup Day next year. And 2 Queen Anne enclosure tickets for Royal Ascot 2022 is the third prize. That's the free-to-play competition. There is potentially nice cash to be won throughout the week, with first to 500th getting paid out. Admittedly, 500th might only be getting £5, but still, some nice money up for grabs there, particularly if, like me, you've blown your 10 to follow flat team already. So Royal Ascot's 10 to follow mini game is available now. The deadline is Tuesday, 12 p.m. 100% of the pool is paid out in cash. 1 stable per customer with top racing prizes for the free to play. You can have as many as you want, within reason, obviously. As you build your stables for €5.50 or £5. And best of luck to you with whoever it is you go for. But Rory and I are backing Trusham. Whether Rory's going to go with him in the 10 to follow is another matter entirely. The Britannia Stakes, the Heritage Handicap. This is wide open betting. Air to Air is currently 10 to 1 with Sir George Borley's in tremendous form and Jamie Spencer's on board. So this could be a Jamie Spencer special again. We've got Roger Varian with Rudderborg 12s. Belmont Avenue for Joseph O'Brien, 14s. George Peabody, 16s. And Horoscope, who, amazingly, Ryan Moore's jocked up on Fraden O'Brien, is currently a 16-1 shot. Your thoughts on the Britannia over the mile, straight mile at Ascot, Rory?
Pretty horrible race to try to do, I think, at this stage again, with 40 plus horses in there. Listen, almost everything at the top of the betting needs to be on your shortlist. Just a bunch of improving three-year-old handicappers. Some of them will want soft ground, some of them won't. One who's not proven on turf at all, but is worth looking at, is Royal Pleasure for Sir Mark Prescott. I was very impressed with his win at Wolverhampton late last month. He was then beaten, trying to follow up a week later at Kempton, but didn't get the race run at Kempton to suit him at all. Is much better than that. And as a son of Kingman, is absolutely screaming out for a mile. Mm-hmm. So I think the horses in here are like Radabarg's a lovely horse, for example. But, you know, he won easily at Haydock last time out. The handicappers put him up £11 for it. So, you know, once you show a handicap what you can do, you end up going up a lot in the weights. So you're kind of looking for something that sneaks under the radar here, which is becoming harder and harder to do. When Sir Mark Prescott won this with Wizard King, back in, what was it, 1993 maybe, that horse got enough 7-stone-7 and was rated in the 70s. You just can't do that now. You've got to be rated 90 to get into the Britannia. But in saying that, you know, the trick with all the handicaps at Royal Ascot is to be able to qualify for a mark with, you know, showing as little as possible. Now, when I say showing as little as possible, you can't run around the back of the field. You're not going to get a rating to get in here. But you want to be able to win on your handicap debut, for example, or get in on the basis of a maiden win before the handicap and really get an idea of how good you are. And that's what makes the handicap so hard to unpick here. Because there's no point saying who's the best horse based on what they've shown, because you know that there are quite a lot of horses who are hiding a stone and a half of improvement. And that's why I generally want to find horses who are unexposed. And Royal Pleasure is definitely unexposed in that. Although he's had two handicap runs, he's only got up £4 from his last run, and he's untried at a mile, which he would definitely improve for. There's one further down the way who's worth putting in your trackers, what's called Isla Kay or Isla Kai for Nigel Tinkler. But he's number 46 on the list, so he's unlikely to get into this contest. But you never know. You never know what happens. He might sneak in at the bottom there. And if he does, he'd be quite a big price. Unfortunately, again, if you work out the overround of this race, it's absolutely enormous.
Yeah.
You find a horse with very little chance on paper and it's still 25-1. That's pretty much your rank outsider's price here. And you know that you're going to get 100-1 about half decent horses in this in the day. 33 runners for crying out loud. They can't all be 20.
Exactly.
Or shorter. So there's no value in it at the moment. But those are a couple to bear in mind. If you're getting 20s and above, 25s and above, ideally. As I said, Ida K probably doesn't get in this race because it needs 13 to come out even to get in on the day. But he's probably a handicapper to follow on soft ground. His two wins have come on soft, so his best chances if the rain is confirmed, at declaration stage, is going to come on Thursday, and people decide they know it's going to be soft and take horses out. If it's up in the air, whether it rains or not, then people will declare as if it's fast ground and then just withdraw on the day, which is no good if you're down the weights. So he probably doesn't get in, but stick him in your tracker as a horse to keep it on side on soft ground.
Okay, and you are siding with Sir Mark Prescott and Luke Morris, currently 16-1, Royal Pleasure. Probe interests me at a similar price. He was beaten by Horoscope earlier this season. Horoscope has run about a million times since. But the last two performances at Killarney and the Stall, I thought for Probe were very interesting, to say the least. So if he comes over, I'd be keen enough on him. Second last race of the day, King George V Stakes handicap. Is Nagano for Roger Varian and David Egan a deserved favourite, or should we be playing more attention to his stable companion title?
Both of them are very, very interesting. They've got the right profile, three runs. Nagano has won two novices, and Title has won a maiden and been placed in both a novice and a maiden. And they're bred to improve from the summer of their three-year-old careers onwards. So they both got very obvious profiles for a race like this. And again, here's your issue pumping and handicaps at Ascot. If you trust your ability to read form, you're finding horses you think might be a couple of pounds clear, but you're also up against horses who you know are going to improve by more than that amount. So you need to know how much improvement your horse has got rather than how well it's capable of running at this stage. Never makes these races easy. Again, 1.5 miles at Ascot, high draws are what you need to look for. They're not, it's perfectly possible to win from a low to middle draw. But time and time again, the horses who are drawn high outperform those who are drawn low in races like this, particularly so with there's a bit of digging the ground as well. So again, when you see the decks for this, I always start from the outside. And if I've got a horse that I know can go forward and I know is trained by someone who understands Ascot and ridden by a jockey who's happy to ride it that way, then I want to have those horses on side. On the other hand, a lot of trainers still think if you're drawn wide, you can't win. And the first thing they want to do is cut in towards the rail and get cover. That literally never works. So it usually pays to be handy. If it doesn't, then it pays to be able to move out and get a clear run on the straight. And you can do both. I've seen a couple of... go back and watch... if you want to get an idea of how this track rides, go back and watch the winning ride on Atty Purse from Kieran Schumark in 2017, where he came from stall 22. He kept wide on the track and he went hard from the start. And everyone was gobsmacked that he was able to win. He was then sent off a really short price for a group race and a stick start and was beaten out of sight. But he's not really a group horse. He was just a handicapper with the perfect draw who was given a ride by a young jockey who believed he could win. Similarly, when Gold Mount won this race the previous year, it wasn't called Gold Mount. What was his name when he won it?
God, yeah. They changed it when he was sold.
Okay, he went to Hong Kong and they changed his name and then he's obviously come back and he's run here as
Hockham?
Gold Mount again. No. Damn it. I know exactly what it was. But there you go. But they even changed the name in the race report. But he, again, ridden by a reasonably inexperienced jockey in Willie Twiston Davis, and drawn wide. He raced up pretty much the centre of the track in the straight. And again, you just got to stay away from the rail. The one thing that will change this draw bias at Ascot, and I think we're beginning to get there now, is that jockeys realise you don't want the crowding up on the rail. And they tend to fan out a bit more in the straight naturally. So those who are towards the front, they start fanning out themselves, which means the horses are coming from behind from wide draws who would normally have all the room in the world to come up the straight. They then have to move further out or cut inside to get a run. And that might just be the factor that ruins this wonderful draw bias that no one's noticed for 30 years. But yes, it's not a problem. When he won that, I'm going to remember his name.
I've got it. Primitivo.
When he won it, he beat Planetude. He was drawn in stall 18. And you had the likes of the Major General drawn in stall 13, Paris Protocol, stall 14, just behind there. When Aidan O'Brien saddled the first three home in this race, the winner was actually drawn in stall 8, South Pacific, in 2019. But like the next seven home were drawn 14 and wider.
Mm.
So, you know, it's not a case of win only the horse for the widest draw, but do your form study from the outside, find a horse who's going to get a good position and whose jockey isn't going to try to get on the rail, at least not until the home turn. And I think if you watch Kieran Schumark again, I don't think Atty Purse gets close to the inside until Swindy Bottom. And it was a smashing ride where, you know, as a 3-pound claimer, he had to basically believe what he was told by the trainer as to how to ride that. And again, there are certain trainers who will let the horses do that. Mark Johnson does pretty well. The Godolphin trainers do pretty well. Again, they're more than happy to let the horses run forward. Whereas often you'll find one that you think is really well drawn, and it's got a good chance. And the first thing the jockey does is steady the horse and take it in behind others. And that's, you know, that goes against your logic in going with it. That might work occasionally. For me, it works very rarely at Ascot. Very, very rarely indeed. But there's no point in backing a horse where you know the jockey's going to do that. Ryan Moore does that all the time at Ascot, for example. He'll ride loads of winners at Ascot, and he's an absolutely top-class jockey. But he's one of those jockeys who doesn't believe that a high draw is good. So I've seen him on horses drawn high just make a beeline for the inside rail.
And for a jockey who's won around the world, I can't understand why he keeps doing that.
Yeah, and at most tracks, it gets beaten into you that you've got to take the shortest route. And people are still obsessed with saving ground. And yes, saving ground is good as long as you're always saving ground. But if you're stuck behind another horse and it's going slower than you, you're not saving ground. You're losing ground because that horse is dictating what you can do in the race. So the way you win these races on a round track is there's the notion that all the horses are showing improved form in these races. It's not necessarily true. A lot of horses end up running below form because they can't express what they can do, because they end up in trouble. They end up being stuck behind horses and they cannot express themselves fully. So the jockeys who win these races are the ones who realize that you mustn't be compromised by other horses. And I think that's a hugely important aspect of race riding that doesn't get talked about that much. Do not let other runners compromise you.
Yeah.
And there are various ways of doing that. You can ride from the front. You can ride from the back. The great thing about riding from the back is, you know, again, if you have got the nerve to sit three or four lengths last in a race where you know you've got a horse who's good enough to win that race, then you gradually come out and ensure you get a clear run. That works as well. You get your horse to settle on its own, whereas if it's in company, it tends to get lit up. A lot of people are obsessed with, you've got to race with cover, because otherwise you're using energy. Well, ideally, you want to have a horse that doesn't pull when it's his daylight. And again, I think you see, if you really do your homework, you find there are certain trainers whose horses will always race without over-racing on their own. And there are certain stables where the horses need to have cover, otherwise they pull hard. And once you dot the I's and cross the T's with that, you can narrow things down. Otherwise, form study is an absolute nightmare at Ascot sometimes. If you can work your ass off and find who the best horse is in a lot of these races. And A, you'll find horses improving pasture because they're unexposed. And B, you'll find horses given suboptimal rides that doesn't show the best of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Siskinani is the one I'll go with for Godolphin, who last won this in 2015, but had won it the year before as well. So I'll roll the dice there. Very briefly, Rory, we'll wrap up with the final race, the Buckingham Palace Stakes over 7 furlongs. It's nice to see this race on the card at 6:10. At this point, there's a million horses entered for the race. So briefly, a race that had been taken out of the schedule after 2014, but reintroduced last year, and I'm glad that they're keeping it. Who do you like?
Again, I would like the ground to have some ease in it, but at least it's the last race of the day, and if there's no rain in the morning, there's a chance of rain in the afternoon. And if the going turns just the soft side of good, don't need it to be hock deep, although hock deep would be fine as well. Al Dari has got a tremendous chance here. He's not far short of the best of these anyway. He was a winner over course and distance on his penultimate start. He then really caught the eye of Goodwood last time out when he was badly drawn. Jim Crowley rode him, and from an outside draw at Goodwood, he restrained him in the stalls and took him towards the inside, giving up quite a lot of track position. And then he wasn't good enough to reel in Roscollin. Roscollin, who came from stall 11, by the way, and went forward from the start. Again, Sylvester D'Souza is a very good jockey for that. You've got a draw that people say is a bad draw. Well, if you go forward from it, if you've got the natural speed to take a position, then your draws are relevant. So that's what Sylvester did. Roscollin won well. He then won again next time. Al Dari, who was actually drawn inside Roscollin, drawn in stall 9. Jim Crowley restrained him from the start, soon steadied, travelled well, plenty to do 3 furlongs out, good headway, kept on, never on terms, says the form. the form book, and really he should have gone a lot closer than he did. He was an odds-on favourite that day, which gives you an idea of how well regarded he is. He was given, he was odds-on to beat Ross Colin, given him a stone and a half. Ross Colin, as I said, has won well since and looks very much a horse to follow for the horse watchers. So with digging the ground here and hopefully a lesson learned by Jim Crowley, I think Altari is a standout here.
Okay. I'll give a quick mention to Boardman, who I quite like, and is on a...
Yeah, is Boardman going to run here, or is he going to run the
Wool Game? I think they're going to run here.
Because he was favourite, he was a joint favourite for the Wool Game with Andy Postis.
He was, but I think they've you've asked a question now, Rory. So he's 12-1 for the Wokingham. and obviously you would like to think that that's where they're going to go, but he's 37, and whereas he'd be pretty much guaranteed to run here. I got the impression from Tim Easterby, the way there was an interview with him, I think it was on Racing TV, that this was the race that we're going to go for. So look, if he turns up here, this is where I'd go. But Aldari has been given such a positive mention by Rory as well. But Boardman is on my shortlist for either race.
Yeah, listen, Boardman, he was my nap vote on the podcast last week, or I say last week, 2 weeks ago now, isn't it?
2 weeks, yep.
And I got the job done very easily at Chester. That was an extended 7 furlongs as well. So there was no issue with him regarding the trip. It's just that there had been quite a lot of talk about him from the Wokingham, and he was prominent in the anti-post betting for that. But yes, given that he's proven over 7 furlongs and extended 7 furlongs on softish ground, yeah, he's an obvious enough one. Number 23 here, pretty much guaranteed he gets in as well.
Yeah, guaranteed a run here, whereas he's 37 for the Wokingham. So,
It is worth pointing out with Boardman, of course, that he was taking advantage of a mark of 77 when winning in April, and he's now 20 pounds higher than that, which is not ideal, and of course.
Don't yuck my yum. No. We're going.
The interesting thing about trying him and then walking him and hoping he gets in the race, which is tricky, is he doesn't. He would get in there with his old handicap mark. Because the walking him's an early close.
Yeah, that's actually that's a good point. That's a very.
So
good.
I don't know. I need to look there and see what he actually got. He has. He's a penalty to carry, but. I don't know when the Wokingham actually did close, so it might end up being only a pound difference.
Your best bet for day three?
Well, again, depends on the weather, but if there is a little bit of rain, then Altari would be my best bet. And if there's plenty of rain, then I've had one bet at Royal Ascot. I've had an each way double Altari and Trushan on the basis of the rain coming, because I think both of them are absolutely blindingly obvious. I think they end up going off short prices on softish ground. They were 8-1 and 14-1 for the race that I thought was tremendous value. And then I saw the horrible prospect of fast ground for the day, which would blow the whole thing out of the water.
Yeah. Bring on the rain.
So hopefully that doesn't happen.
Bring on the rain.
While we're here, because obviously we won't be doing the final days podcast, let me find out where dear old Boardman is. He's number 34, by the way.
Has he moved up?
The weights for the Wokingham.
Oh.
And he gets, his penalty kicked in from the mark he had for Chester. So he'd end up being £1 lower. Okay. And I don't think that's enough to sway them. Because he gets his old mark of 90, but he gets a fixed £5 penalty.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still saying 37 on mine, so I don't know
yours is wrong.
Fight Time Form and Racing Post, 2 companies enter, 1 company leaves. That's it. Just to confirm your best bets, your only bets so far for Royal Ascot are Trushan and
I'll worry in the Buckingham Palace. Aldari rather than
Aldari, yeah.
As I said, I've done those in an each way double, because that's 134-1, or it was at the time. That was earlier on today.
That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, Aldari has to be favourite for this race, as long as we don't have unbroken sunshine all the way through the week. As long as the ground turns the soft side of good, even if it's just the soft side of good, Aldari with his profile. four runs and three wins and an unlucky third in his last start, has to be favourite for this race and potentially quite a short price favourite in handicap terms. So I have to be on at 48.
And that, is, yeah, you're currently getting, what price have you got right now? 14s, is that what you said?
14s at the moment, and as I said, Trushani, it's for the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
And if we get a soft ground Gold Cup, what do you think the price is going to be between Stradivarius and Trushan?
Trushan's going to close an awful lot.
Oh, he's going to be 3-1, isn't he? Soft ground. 3-1, 7-2. I can't believe he's not going to be third favourite. I can't believe he's third.
No way. No way. Not on soft.
If it turns soft, that's subjective. That not subjective is a chance as well. So, you know, he ends up being, you know, as I said, 7-2 maybe for that race. So I'm thinking these two could be 7-2 and 5-1.
Let's go. Let's do it.
So if I'm getting three times those prices, I'll be very happy.
Let's do it. Let's do it. That's it. Rory De Laragie, pleasure as always. We'll chat to you again for day 4 of Royal Ascot, the Friday, which in our reality terms is in a few minutes. So until then, my friend, chat to you then.
Marvellous. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget that this week, and really, I can't really say for all time, but always, when you're betting at Royal Ascot, you have to take advantage of what Tote are offering. Tote have been offering Tote Plus now for a number of weeks. And it's up to you. Do you want to take this? Do you want to take advantage of this and get this gravy? Or do you want to sit back and see the whirlpool with inflated pools and on top of that, a 10% boost applied to all of your winnings through Tote Plus. Now, you might be betting on Tote with an affiliate site or a partner site. Doesn't count. Tote.ie, tote.co.uk, your official Tote app. You bet there, you get the guaranteed Tote SP. They're guaranteed to match the SP no matter what. The fact that the World Pool is in play with bettors in Hong Kong, America, Australia, France, all betting into the pools and further afield as well, means that there's going to be an awful lot of gravy there and then 10% on top of your winnings. You got to take advantage of it. It's free gravy. Reach out, take it. Tote.co.uk, tote.ie, and the official Tote app. 10% on top of all of your horse racing bets with Tote Plus. It's there, go take it. And particularly for this week, and Rory makes a great point. Day of race betting, it's going to be an awful lot different than the overruns we're currently seeing. An awful lot different. So Thursday, yeah, of course, we could have a massive change in terms of prices, particularly if the ground changes. But what we also could have is insane amounts of value at Tote. So tote.co.uk. Tote.ie or the official Tote app, and the very best of luck to you. My nap for the day is Noonstar. Lazily going in with Sir Michael Stout's favourite.
He's got form with Snowfall. Real genius effort that one, Kennedy.
I will mention Council, who I didn't give a proper mention to earlier on. Oshie Murphy for John and Thady Gosden. Pretty sure you can get 25s. I didn't give him a proper mention earlier on. I really like Council. So if he can get in to the Britannia, I would like him for a place. Not necessarily for a win, but definitely for a place. So take advantage. Tote Plus, giving you the 10% bump. Right, that's it. Thank you so much. Our day 4 preview is coming up. More strong opinions and hopefully lots of gravy as well. Until then, thanks for the kind words on social media. Take care of yourself. We'll talk to you soon. God bless.
The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.